Barring rains that start now and continue for months, which are highly unlikely, California is in for another bad drought year. State leaders made a couple of announcements about programs to get water and relief to hard-hit areas and people this week. That includes yesterday's announcement by Governor Jerry Brown and legislative leaders of a proposed billion-dollar package of drought relief measures. There are many interested parties, because we all use water. The environmental legal organization Earth Justice has been commenting for a while on California's approach to drought mitigation. Trent Orr is an attorney with Earth Justice, specializing in water and species protection work. He's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Trent, welcome. Trent Orr, are you there? Trent Orr is not on the line. We will try to get the phone connection reestablished and give him another call back. Sometimes those brief silences that we hear on our end of the line get things going. So let's try to call Brent again on the phone, and I can just tell you a little bit about his group, which is looking at things like fish versus farmers. Perhaps is not correct in thinking that that is a dichotomy. We don't have to have one or the other. One of the approaches that Earth Justice takes, it is also on record as saying California needs drought solutions, not mindless bills. So a couple of different attitudes that are expressed from the group Earth Justice. And we're hoping to get connected again with Trent Orr, the attorney with Earth Justice, in just a few moments. And we'll get there. So we again welcome your thoughts once we get Trent back on the line about how things are being approached in terms of drought mitigation and drought legislation around the region. Our phone number here, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So Trent Orr coming back on the line any moment here, and we'll be able to say hello to him. Trent, you there this time?
Yeah.
Okay, good to have you back on the Jefferson Exchange. Can you tell us a bit about Earth Justice and what the group is all about?
Sure. We're a national nonprofit law firm, basically, that represents citizens groups and Native American tribes, fishing industries, environmental organizations, basically promoting the health and welfare of our environment.
Are you the army of lawyers people often refer to?
I wish we were an army. We're some of the lawyers that work on the side of trying to keep the environment in good shape.
Well, it seems like, particularly in California, you're always going to be dealing with water issues, whether there is drought or not. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, yeah, it's the old statement that has been wrongly attributed to Mark Twain. Everything funny is given to him, but that whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting, and that seems to be sort of a permanent situation in the West and in California. And it, you know, if the climate scientists are right, it's only going to get more difficult in the future as precipitation patterns change and as we see there's less water held in snowpack and all of that sort of thing.
So pre-drought, what were some of the water issues you pursued at Earth Justice?
Well, we've been very involved in the operations of the Central Valley Project, which is the big federal water project that delivers water to agriculture in the Central Valley, and the State Water Project, which is the California analog of that, and the two of them are operated together. And the effects that those have had on both a number of endangered and threatened fish species, as well as just sort of the overall health of the delta of the Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers. That's, you know, all of the water in the state, basically, from north to south, drains through that valley. And, well, not all of the water, but the Central Valley drainage is a huge drainage, and then it all empties out through the delta and San Francisco Bay. And so we've been working to try to restore the health of that area.
It is pretty striking when you look at it on a map, the way that the Sacramento drains from north to central and the San Joaquin from south to central, and it all comes out through the delta of the San Francisco Bay. It's a lot of water from all over California.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, less in the last few years, but yeah, it's our main source of water for a whole variety of uses, agriculture, domestic use, and fisheries, and it's very difficult, and the system is sort of massively oversubscribed. That is that the water projects have committed more water to various users of water than typically flows through the system in any given year, and that, of course, is exacerbated when you're in a drought situation. There's even less water to go around, and everyone howls because they're not getting their allocations. But the allocations are sort of what people refer to as paper water. That is, the water doesn't necessarily even exist. It's just that the agencies have committed certain amounts, you know, if they're able to deliver them, and they've kind of, as I say, oversubscribed what's really available there. And that's something we think in the long run needs to change. We need to be more realistic about how big the pot is and how equitably to split it up in a way that takes account of not just, you know, industrial agriculture, but also takes account of keeping the whole Central Valley and Bay Delta ecosystems alive.
That issue in particular is one that seems like it's often said and seldom verified. Is it true that even in an average water year, there are more promises made to the water than the water can deliver?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I've heard various statistics about, you know, how much more, but I mean, it's substantially more than falls in any average year is contractually committed. Of course, the contracts have clauses that say, well, in case of you know, various situations, including drought, that amount will drop or be dropped. But we think that, you know, just creating the expectation in the water users that they really should be getting, you know, X amount of water when really what's available, if you realistically divided it up with, say, a fifth of X, that just creates bad expectations and creates conflicts where there really shouldn't be conflicts because more is being promised than is available.
Trent Doerr is our guest on the program. He's an attorney with Earth Justice in the Bay Area. We're talking about drought strategies in California and the Earth Justice view of those. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 around the region. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Given how much water has been moved from place to place in California over the last century and a half, I mean, how much does Earth Justice want to sort of fix what's there now, and how much you're talking about potentially going back and restoring water to the places that whether intentionally or not, gave it up?
Well, some of both, I suppose. I mean, it's a very complicated picture. Something that we've been looking at recently and that the state has been looking at, California was the last state in the West, basically, to have any kind of controls on the use of groundwater. That is, that when a drought like this happens, the agricultural interests and others, you know, keep digging their wells deeper and deeper, and it becomes, and pumping more and more water out of the ground, which leads to its own problems. And it wasn't until last fall when Governor Brown signed some legislation to start kind of measuring how much is being taken out and putting some controls on groundwater use that there was any regulation of that. So that, I think, is one big piece of the puzzle, and that's going to be playing out over the next couple decades, really. The aim is to get the groundwater aquifers recharged in the Central Valley and then you have a system that the amount of water drawn out is sustainable. That is, that it's at a rate at which it's replaced. Right now, it's, you know, whoever has enough money to go deep enough gets the most water. Another thing we look at is crop patterns. There's been a huge switch in the Central Valley in recent years to so-called permanent crops, almond trees and that sort of thing. And we don't think that's a very intelligent decision to make in a state that's prone to drought to plant something that will need water constantly when we're in a state that is historically in a, you know, subject to a pattern of droughts and which may be getting worse because of climate change.
Yeah, the point with the trees I can see is that it's as opposed to a crop that you can change out every year in favor of something else.
Yeah, or decide, you know, this year we only have X amount of water, so we're just going to let the North Field lie fallow and we're going to concentrate our water in growing, you know, tomatoes or whatever. But yeah, annual crops are much more manageable. And I know during the drought, there are people who have actually had to, you know, cut down their almond trees. And if you drive through the Central Valley, you'll see signs for almond wood. And from an individual farmer's perspective, that's an unfortunate thing, obviously. But in making that decision and in having a system that sort of artificially promises more water than there actually is, you know, we're promoting agriculture that really doesn't belong in a semi-arid part of our state, because it isn't, that certainly isn't sustainable.
We have a couple of phone calls for you. We'll start with Ann in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Trent Orr from Earth Justice. Ann, go ahead. Ann, are you there? I'll put her back on hold. Let's go and see if we can talk to Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Trent Orr. Mark, are you there? Mark in Reading is not there. Okay, something up with the phone system today. We'll have to check and see if we got all the buttons in the right places. So, Trent, just in general, the approach to drought thus far, this is about the fourth year in this cycle. How are we doing? What's your view of what's been going on?
Well, I think it's one of those cases where no one wants to admit, well, first, you don't know how bad the problem is, because we all had high hopes that there would be rains like we had in December continuing on through the spring. But I think that with each successive year, we've gotten more serious about it. I mean, the governor and the leaders of the two houses of the California legislature just yesterday announced a $1 billion package to deal in some ways with the effects of the drought. Typically we get sort of too little too late. It's better than nothing, but we don't have the kind of systemic changes in place yet, but it sort of evolves as we go on. I mean, if this persists, we're going to be probably in the situation again like we were when I first moved to California in the late 70s, where you were not supposed to flush your toilet more often than absolutely necessary, and sort of home domestic water use was ratcheted down on. That hasn't happened yet, other than requests for voluntary conservation measures, but those sorts of things will be coming up. But I think it's a slow sort of reaction by the government to, it's sort of, let's see how bad it gets, let's hope for or pray for rain, and if the rain doesn't come, then more and more serious measures have to be taken, and I fear that that's probably what's in store for this coming summer.
So do you think mandatory control should have come sooner, for one thing?
It probably wouldn't have hurt. And another thing we try to promote, not just with agriculture, but all around, is, more efficient use of the water we have, and, everything from drip irrigation systems to, not requiring hotels to wash the towels every day if the people who want them don't have them. There are all kinds of things that can be done, and I don't think we've been aggressive enough in doing those. And I hope one thing that people learn from this drought is that, we need to put some of those measures in place kind of on a permanent basis. I mean, there's no reason to be wasting water even when we're in, sort of fatter times.
So always work on the assumption that this is not a place that gets a lot of rain, which is the fact for
right.
Much of the state. Yeah. Let's see if we can try Ann and Eugene again. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Trent Orr from Earth Justice.
Thank you. I've been waiting to make this comment for years. I think that California has had its head in the sand about its water problem since about 1950. I will acknowledge that California recognizes its water problems when it does three things. A, stops raising rice in the desert. B, stops allowing the irrigation of golf courses, and C, stops allowing the filling of private swimming pools. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Ann. Appreciate it. Trent, what are your thoughts about those?
Well, I think those are all measures that, one of the measures, in fact, that this recent announcement by the government, Water Resources Control Board, they also this week laid down some law, and one of the things they did was restrict the amount of watering that could be done of golf courses and manicured parklands and that sort of thing. So that's one of the many ways we could save more water. And with respect to the remark about rice, I mean, that's sort of along the lines of other comments I was making, that there really needs to be a more rational look at the cropping patterns in the valley, that we shouldn't be planting water-intensive crops in what's essentially a sagebrush kind of habitat, a semi-arid land, which particularly in the southern end of the Central Valley, that land is only agriculturally viable because of the water that's pumped down there by these projects. And one of the problems that's occurred, which was kind of unexpected consequence, is that the water down there, or the basin in that end of the valley doesn't drain very well, and it percolates up a number of toxic chemicals after enough watering. And in fact, some of that land has been withdrawn from production altogether, and there are serious questions about whether that really is a place that it makes sense to continue agriculture, because it's turned out to be an extremely problematic place, not just from the water use perspective, but from sort of a water pollution perspective.
Trent Dore, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an attorney with Earth Justice in the Bay Area. We're talking about California drought strategies. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 around the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Mark in Reading, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Yes, what about Northern European lawns in a Mediterranean climate? I mean, I see water running down the gutters in the streets regularly.
Yeah, a lot of people do tend to water their sidewalks, it seems like, in addition to their lawns. A lot of runoff there. Okay, thanks for that point, Mark. Appreciate it. Trent, I mean, how specific does Earth Justice get in the kinds of things it wants to see in the way of house-to-house kind of behavior?
Well, I mean, as a law firm, we're usually bringing the litigation about effects of the drought or just our water management on fish and the ecological health of the delta and all. But we certainly promote measures. And I mean, as the Mark just said, you know, we are in a culture where I guess people moved west from the east and expect to have sort of the English country garden, and we're unfortunately in a Mediterranean climate that doesn't support those sorts of things. So measures like he was suggesting, I mean, in the last drought, I remember I'd never heard the term xeriscaping, which meant growing drought-tolerant plants, and that's, you know, that's something we certainly support as a, you know, plant native vegetation in your garden, and don't try to have a manicured lawn, which is a very water-thirsty thing and which is really an unnatural sort of situation for California. But, you know, those are the kinds of habits that die very hard. But that's the sort of thing, again, this summer we may be seeing, you know, just sort of regulations that say you cannot water.
I remember being surprised last August, and that involved driving down to the Bay Area from, you know, past Shasta Lake, seeing how low the water level there was, and then staying in a motel in Martinez across the street from a place that says, there's no time limit on your car wash, that you can wash your car as long as you like. I thought, don't these people realize what's going on a few miles from here?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And again, I think we'll probably be seeing more dirty cars because I think that's, again, one of the first places that, you know, it's going to get very strict mandatory controls if the drought, as it looks like it will, persists.
All right, another call here from Jeff in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Trent Orr. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. Yeah, I'm from Eureka. My ancestry goes back to the Chinook tribe up on the Columbia River. The Columbia River flows into the Pacific Ocean at 198 million acre feet per second. 10% could be sent down to California in the original plan of a canal going down through the chutes on an old railroad grade and coming down into California and dropping off the plateau, the Oregon Plateau, into the Pitt River arm of the But anyway, and then down through the infrastructure of California.
Mm-hmm. Into Shasta Lake through the Pitt River. Okay. So,
that's
so,
correct.
But you'd be in favor of that?
I would be.
Okay. Thanks for that, Jeff. Yeah. Appreciate it. So, Trent, give us an idea of whether there's discussion of ideas of, like, importing water to California from elsewhere.
Well, there haven't been as much recently simply because the costs are astronomical. I mean, here in California, one of the biggest users of energy, and it's a significant portion of our annual energy budget, and I can't give you an exact figure, but is pumping water out of the Central Valley over the Tehachapis and down to the LA Basin and point south. And I think we're sort of at an era where that just isn't, you know, that kind of expense when we're trying to get more efficient with energy and move away from fossil fuels and all that sort of thing is probably a pretty serious barrier to those things. There is talk of expanding reservoir capacity within California. In fact, there's a proposal right now to raise the Shasta Dam, which you were noting was way low, but by another 18 feet.
Right, mm-hmm.
And that's very controversial. And in fact, there are a number of Native Americans who are very concerned about that, in addition to environmentalists, because, I mean, basically that the original Shasta Dam flooded a lot of ancestral sites and sacred sites and that sort of thing for a tribe called the Winnemem Wintu. And this threatens to kind of destroy the last vestiges of their cultural heritage, as well as flood some wild and scenic river candidates and that sort of thing. So it's, again, it's a very controversial subject, and we basically think that, you know, large infrastructure projects are not nearly as effective or as cost-effective, certainly, because this is, you know, like a $1 billion project, as, you know, more efficient use of the water and recharging groundwater. I mean, we have storage capacity underground that we're draining, and there's no reason why that, without creating a dam or expanding a dam, couldn't in the long run be the way that we go to keep our water. And part of the problem with that has been in the past, those, as I was saying earlier, the groundwater hasn't been regulated, and so it was just, you know, whoever could put the deepest straw into the drink got the water, and those above had to, you know, you have a race to out drill your neighbor. But, you know, that's, to me, a more sustainable way to deal with the water, is to get the groundwater recharged and be careful about how you manage it.
So is it fair to characterize the general approach of Earth Justice to let's get a little clearer about who owns rights to water, be more realistic about who could potentially, how many we could potentially have owning one stretch of water and so forth, just being clearer about who gets rights to what?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, I would put it as, you know, taking a look at the resource we have and then finding ways to manage it so that it, number one, if it stays available, that it's managed in a sustainable way, and then two, to really make some hard decisions about how to divide it equitably so that, you know, agriculture, the fishing industry, water consumers all have a fair chance to use it.
All right, a lot of people with a lot of claims on not very much water, and even less in this additional year of drought that we have approaching. Trent Doerr is an attorney with Earth Justice, an environmental law firm in the Bay Area. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. It's been nice to talk to you.